Well, thank you. We will start off the question and answer session now. We have some quite a few questions typed in, so let's see. We'll start off with, and I think most of these questions kind of are geared to all the presenters, so I'll let any one of you jump in. The first question is, I heard Randy say that the iPhone was chosen because it locks while the truck is in transit. Does that lock happen automatically, or does the driver do it? And if the driver encounters a real-time traffic delay but can't pull over, can he use the phone?
Well, the lock actually happens as the truck starts to move. And if the truck is not moving, the lock will basically be available, the phone will be available for use. We haven't done anything in respect to if he's idling in traffic right now. But that is the case that where he could use the phone if he is stopped.
The locking was programmed within the CTIP application. So as soon as the truck starts moving, we know that. So that's what locks the application. But once he stops, they can exit out of the CTIP application on the iPhone, and then he can use the phone for whatever he needs to.
Okay. What percent of dray trucks are currently technology ready and functional now at Chicago and Kansas as examples? And what are the tech upgrade timelines in years?
Well, again, I want to emphasize this is a research project, and there's nothing going on in Chicago at this time. What we're developing is certainly going to be transferable and usable in Chicago and other locations, but right now our number of iPhones is really low. It's probably way below 10%. I don't know exact number percentage-wise, but you know. And as we get additional funding or find additional resources to add more, and we will. But we first want to prove the concept, and that's the basis of the research. Can we do this? Can we reroute trucks? Can we optimize these loads? Will it work? And if we get to that point and say, yes, it can work, and we've got the full cooperation of all the participants, and it is working, then we can go to the next step and add more iPhones into it and add us actually more functionality, hopefully.
Okay, going back to the first question, I think you already answered this, but there's no way that the device can detect stationary idling, is there?
We can tell when it's moving.
Okay. I understand RTTM is used for industry in Europe. How much of that previous work is being used as a starting place here?
Jen, let me back up. This is Paul. Let me back up to the question that Abby had about stationary idling. In and of itself, no, the phone can't. But the important thing, again, it was an important design consideration going way back to when we first selected the iPhone, was that, you know, it's a communications and computing device. Has multiple mechanisms for exchanging information. One thing that we've talked about and may eventually come to pass in this project that I don't know what the current status is you can attach devices to the data bus on the engine data bus that have Bluetooth communications capability that can connect directly with the iPhone. So theoretically, when the iPhone detects that it's sitting still, which it can do on its own, it can monitor whether or not the engine data bus is indicating that the engine is running, what RPM it's running, and based on calculations that you can build in about the power plant that's in the vehicle, you could certainly calculate fuels being consumed and how much emissions are being generated as the vehicle sits there. You just have to create those interfaces and do the mathematical logic behind them to make that possible.
Okay. And then going back to the question about RTTM.
Well, you know, I'm not sure how much of what we're doing with RTTM has been done in Europe. I know that in general terms, you know, the accumulation of traffic information and the calculation of travel times over a predefined route, that in and of itself, as I mentioned earlier, isn't really anything cutting edge. That's, you know, you could buy devices off the shelf, a Garmin or a any other number of different devices off the shelf today that can, if you input a destination, will tell you how long it'll take to get there across a route that it defines as the quickest route, or it adheres to some predetermined set of characteristics that you program in, like avoid tolls or avoid highways or use only highways or whatever. So this test was less about that, really, than it was about, as I mentioned before, integrating all these multiple sources of information and, excuse me, and tailoring the information specifically to the freight community and how it operates in the U.S. So there's a lot of inherent kind of background knowledge that comes from the experience that our staff has in doing those sorts of things, but there isn't anything specific that I can point to that we carry over from something that was done in Europe.
Okay. The next question is, will the cargo be identified so that another layer of goods movement is tracked?
Well, this is something that's very sensitive to the railroad industry, and we have actually had to sign non-disclosures that we would not be tracking any goods movement at this time. It's very competitive information, and it is scrubbed out of the data that we receive. So the answer to that is no. We're not doing any type of goods movement tracking with this project.
Okay. Do reroutes account for existing and or future roadway conditions, such as weather, construction, or low bridges?
Well, the answer to that question is yes, right now, to a certain extent. Construction, weather, and those sorts of things, to the extent they show up as variations in traffic speeds on some segments of roadway, are accounted for right now. Basically, for the purposes of calculating the travel times, the nature of whatever the delay is less important than the impact that the delay has on the overall travel time. So while we're not specifically tracking weather or construction, we are taking real-time information from the network that is reflective of the impact of those situations on the roadway travel time. In terms of things like low bridges or other sorts of route-specific information, for this test, we've carefully constructed the routes to avoid those kinds of things just as a manual practice in the development. The idea would be that absolutely, in a deployed situation, you would want to build into your database the ability to prevent reroutes to locations that have low bridges or have, limited load limited bridges or other sorts of things, very restrictive roadway geometry that makes it difficult for vehicles to make turns. All those kinds of things you would want to build into a system that is in a production environment so that you open up the possibilities for reroutes to a whole host of other potential roadway segments. And one other thing that I'm sure that you'd want to limit, if not completely eliminate, is trips through or bordering residential areas. You don't want to reroute trucks through somebody's neighborhood. That's a great way to get yourself extremely unpopular in a very in a hurry. So, hope that answers the question.
Okay. Are there any safety-related performance measures?
No, not at this time. I know we have heard from our freight technology working group that there are possible some safety-related metrics that should be considered. We're in the process of looking at those, but at this time we haven't included any safety related metrics to be supported by the project.
Okay. I think, Randy, you already answered the question about how the program is financed, but the next question is, how do you deal with third party concern for confidential information regarding their shipments?
Well, I think I've dealt with that too in respect to the confidential statements that we had to sign, NDAs, that non-disclosure. First of all, we asked the carriers not to send us any information, and that's pretty much scrub data before we get it. So we are trying to only look at the movement information that's required and keep that as part of our operating environment.
Okay. What are the time frames for the dashboards? Are they real time, weekly, monthly, or annually?
Well, they are at any time you want to see them. They're basically updated. Ed, do you want to answer that?
I mean, the data on the dashboard is being updated on a real-time basis. So as data comes into the IMEX database, it gets posted to the dashboard. We are accumulating the information, though, to be able to summarize it on a weekly, monthly, or longer-term basis.
Okay. Does the emissions reduction software match with MOVE's 2010A? I'm not sure if the person who asked that wants to clarify. We can move on to the next question if they want to clarify in the chat box there.
I think I know what they're talking about. I need to get some clarification from some people in our office, but I think that we're pretty much on track with that. But I can follow up with a better answer.
Okay. And yeah, they said they clarified and said yes, emissions factors.
Yeah, I just know the factors that we're using now came from. What specific version of the model it was, so we would have to follow up on that, get a firmer answer.
Okay. And the last question that we'll have that's in there, but that we have to have time for today too, is do you encourage the trips to occur during off-peak hours?
We haven't gotten to that point where we've set those kind of parameters. I mean, this is something when you look at Kansas City, the volume is very low, so that's really not an issue in Kansas City. As we move this project into areas such as Chicago, there may be a factor of some type of showing the benefits of moving the loads later in the evening or during non-peak times, but it would be a future enhancement of the system.
And actually, one last question came in. We'll go ahead and ask this one, too. Is avoiding residential areas a criterion that the routing software uses, or are residential areas avoided only by making unobstructed ways easy to find?
Well, no. It's avoiding residential areas right now for this test is simply done by not offering any roadways as alternative routes that go through those sorts of areas. Prove out the concept and we examine the extent to which DRG can actually give us accurate predicted travel times, then we'll start to look at more complex, more comprehensive ways of setting up route priorities and opening it up so it's not just fixed routes, it'll be routes that can be determined by the length of the system on the fly. Right now we're just using fixed routes, fixed primary and fixed alternate routes.
Okay. Well, we're about out of time for today, so I think we're going to go ahead and close out. I want to thank all of our presenters, and thank you everybody for attending today's seminar. The recording will be available online within the next few weeks, and I'll send out an email once it becomes available. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member applying for certification maintenance credits for today's seminar, the seminar is not yet available on the AICP website, but I'll send out an email once that is up, hopefully within the next week. I also want to encourage everybody to download the evaluation form, fill it out, and send it back to me. And for those of you applying for credits, you can download the applying for AICP credits instructions. The next seminar will be on December 15th and will be about freight and land use, making the connection. The seminar is not yet available for registration, but I'll send an additional information through the freight planning listserv once registration is open. I encourage you to join the freight planning listserv if you haven't already done so, and I'll put that slide back up on the screen with the information. So with that, we'll close out. Thank you, everybody. Have a great Thanksgiving and enjoy the rest of your day.